Welcome to Indoctrination, a weekly conversation series about protecting yourself from systems of control. I'm your host, Rachel Bernstein.
Hello, everyone. Today on the show, we have a special guest, Jennifer Riala. She is a married mother of three with a BS in social sciences and criminal justice from Michigan State University. And after working for the state government investigating cases of child abuse and neglect, she was recruited into Arbonne and convinced to quit her job. Jennifer joined an MLM, multi-level marketing, coaching group, and quickly rose to leadership, ascending to the, quote, white Arbonne Mercedes, unquote, level, only to become trapped in a three-year lease for a car she could not afford. When she confronted the organization's leader about unfair practices, she was immediately excommunicated by the entire group. Today, Jennifer works with nonprofits and local school districts introducing anti-fraud and anti-scam curricula to families. As part of her healing journey, which includes therapy, workshops, and a supportive network, Jennifer openly shares her story in hopes of helping others avoid similar pitfalls. It is a pleasure for me to be able to talk to Jennifer Riala today because there's so much for us to cover that is incredibly important. This whole idea of MLMs, of multi-level marketing, I'm so glad that now it's in the news more often, it's being covered more often, but still there are plenty of people who don't know that this is what they're getting involved in because the sale tactic is so good and convincing and distracting, I think, from what you should be able to notice and focus on and really getting steamrolled into a lot of these groups. There is a certain part of this that I really want to be able to talk about, actually a bunch of parts, about getting involved in multiple things and also feeling like you were part of the problem, right? Like this is what happens when people get involved in groups where they're pushed to recruit, to convince others and what you're left with emotionally afterwards that really can do a number on you and your conscience. So there's so many different directions. And so I want to make sure to just get started. So if you don't mind taking a few moments just to introduce yourself and then we'll start talking.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. My name is Jennifer Riala, and you pronounced that correctly. My background is in social work and criminal justice. And before being recruited into multi-level marketing, I worked for the government. I did child protective services investigations. I worked with children and families. And I think one of the things that drew me into multi-level marketing was that I did have a passion for helping people. And I remember like the opportunity, as they say, was pitched to me kind of like, well, right now you're doing a great job helping people in your small town, but this could be something where you could make a massive global impact. Wouldn't you want to do that? And I mean, still to this day, I think about that because, I mean, I don't want to skip ahead, but I am back to, you know, helping out in my small little town. And I don't say that as if it's not important. In many instances, it can be even more important because it's not as recognized. But so that's kind of like my background to answer that question. And also, I was a new mom. I was pregnant with our second child. I was doing child protective services investigations. I was working on an infant death case that in my small little town was highly publicized. And being pregnant and working on that, it took a very strong emotional toll. And constantly I would go to work and question, like, why am I doing this to myself? And it was during that time that a friend from college had reached out to me to share her products. And this opportunity, as it's called, but it was a multi-level marketing scam.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. So there's, you know, when people come on to the podcast to talk about the experiences that they've had, I think it's really important to find out more about this person, like that you have all of these other skills. And I think also doing the work that you were doing with child advocacy and a lot of just helping people become aware and feeling protected, it says so much about your sensibilities. And I think then all the more reason that you're going to be left with a lot of feeling about what you feel that you unwittingly, you know, participated in. That's one of the hardest things for really kind people who really want to do good things in the world. You know, I'm sure it's a great conflict.
Yeah. I was also kind of at this place in my life where I was feeling, I was getting called out to work in the middle of the night. Anyone who has done child protective services, foster care, child advocacy, you know, that it does include some on-call hours. And I was wrestling with this notion that I can barely stay afloat with one child. I'm pregnant with my second child. What am I going to do? And I still, to this day, I don't blame the person who recruited me. She was very new. In fact, she had only been involved with Arbonne, which is the multi-level marketing company that I was recruited into. She'd only been involved for like a week, 2 weeks. It was very new. She was being coached on what to say actually while she was speaking to me. And she was very honest and transparent about that. And I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was just like, oh, this is her mentor. I'm helping her. So she had asked me to try some products. And again, being a mom, I wasn't taking care of myself, you know, barely washing my face, falling into bed, all of those things. So using the products felt really good. And so I was like, I'm going to purchase the products. And then she had asked me, well, you know, if you like the products, could you see yourself like sharing them with friends? And I was like, absolutely. Like, why not? You know, and at that time in my life, I was more of a yes person. I don't think I am anymore. I think I've learned a few things, at least I hope so. And I kind of was like, say yes and ask questions later, kind of. And so I was like, sure, why not? And she's like, well, I have a mentor who, if you would be open to getting on a call with her, she could share a little bit about what it is that we do. I think you'd be a great fit. You're very personable. You're very bubbly. Like, you're very professional. You're everything that we're looking for. And that felt so good, Rachel, because anyone perhaps who's listening that has worked in positions like this, there is a lot of work that goes unnoticed just because it is about serving other people. And I think everyone experiences that in their job. So, and being recognized and all of these things, I was like, wow. So I get on the call with this woman and she immediately asks me, you know, what do I do? How many kids do I have? I let her know that I was pregnant. And she told me that she also had two kids and that she was a former Wall Street executive who had left her job on Wall Street to do Arbonne. So immediately I thought, wow, this person also has like a very strong business acumen, much stronger than me. She's got better financial sensibility. I probably should listen to her because I have children to take care of. I can barely stay afloat. I'm not making a lot of money doing social work. So I really listened to her and I'm not quite sure what happened, but by the end of that call, I was signing up for the largest big business package. And all of a sudden, like all in, I'm going to make this work. And looking back, I think one of the things was it was pitched to me as like, what are you going to do on your maternity leave? You're going on maternity leave shortly. How is income going to be coming in? You must not have paid maternity leave. And I'm like, yeah, so maybe this is something I could just bring in a little bit of extra while I'm on maternity leave. And then once I go back to work, whatever. I did not expect it to become this end all be all thing that really became my identity for the next 8 years of my life.
The next 8 years, my goodness. Right. So when you were saying that, you know, you were a yes person, I gave a talk, I think it's available on my website, but I gave a talk at a National Association of Social Workers conference about why people say yes when sort of the better answer in retrospect would have been no. But what pushes us to agree to things, to go for things, to keep saying yes, even also when we're starting to wonder and starting to doubt. And I know that with a lot of self-help thinking, there is this whole power of yes. And you're really supposed to push yourself to be open to things. And it's sort of the Tony Robbins way. And I felt a little funny and negative having a talk be basically like the power of no. Or really the power of maybe, I'll see, let me find out more, you know, because that's sometimes a good thing. But we find that we're not supposed to, like somehow we're trained to feel like we're not supposed to say no, because we're missing an opportunity, you know, that we've been gifted and we might not ever get back. And so I'm wondering what it was for you that prompted you to say yes. What kind of mindset were you in at the time?
I think life was just so busy and so chaotic that, first of all, it was the time, not feeling like I had the time to really sit with it and make a decision, because just like life moves so quickly. I was a young mom. I had a busy job career, like everybody. And I'll be honest, like that's still kind of my personality, like in the sense that I like efficiency. And so it felt like I was being efficient by just saying yes. And I luckily have more people in my life, supportive people in my life, to kind of remind me to slow down a little bit, or have learned tips and tricks to say, like, let me think on it first. But I think just life was moving very quickly for me. So it would have felt odd for me to say, let me wait, because nothing was waiting for me.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Right. Yeah. So you were on a certain speed, certain trajectory, and it was really fitting. Okay. Okay. And so I'm sure you think back on, just as you were talking about, this conversation with this woman and how motivating it was, and even probably thinking back on her words and her style, because, you know, she's probably good at what she was doing and had honed her technique. And so I want, after we hear more about your story, I would love to go back to when you think back on these moments and what was used and what you learned also to use. There are some people in my life who I haven't been able to spend as much time with because there's always something that they're trying to get me to buy or to buy into or to be excited about. And they know the work that I do, but I think that they don't see this as the same. And so I don't want to hear about the phone plan and the jeans or what, I don't know, whatever they're selling. Knowing also that they're really not making a living, but that they're filled with so much enthusiasm and hope and a little bit of promise that feels hollow after a while, just because I've heard it before, but just sort of fill in the blank other product, but it's the same kind of sales technique, which gets to be a lot. It gets to be a lot to have to deal with. And also in terms of MLMs, I didn't know, I had to admit early on in doing this work, I didn't know that they were similar in this way until there are people who would contact me and say, I just heard you talk about cults or cult recruitment and why people stay in certain situations, even after they're not getting what they were thinking they were going to get or were promised, but that they stay. And I'm involved in something, whatever it is, Amway, Herbalife, or whatever it was at the time. And it feels so similar. I feel like you're talking about my business. And so the people who had experienced it firsthand were the ones who taught me about the similar nature, which is really interesting. So tell me about when you first started out. What was it like for you? And what was life like? Just kind of a day in the life of Jennifer when you were first starting to do MLM work.
Well, I was still doing it alongside of Child Protective Services investigations and foster care work and all of that. And so I would work all day and then host events in the evening. And I have a 2-year-old at the time. I'm pregnant. I would have events at my house where people would come over, use the makeup, do facials. And my husband is a very laid back person. And people always ask, what did your spouse think of all of this? And he knows my personality, and he does know that he's not going to be able to tell me no. And in many ways, that might push me to do it more. So he kind of said, okay, like, you're allowed, you can make your own decisions. And what do you need from me? I think that started to wane, obviously, as the 8 years went on, and we can get to that. But at first, I was just like, hey, I'm having people over, but it was exhausting. But I thought, I kept being told by other women, mostly, there are men also in Arbonne, but women mostly, like, if you just put your head down, put blinders on, that's like a saying that is often used. If you put blinders on and just book out your calendar and get in front of, we had this strategy in Arbonne called 40 faces in 40 days. So if you get in front of one new person, supposedly 40 for 40 days, one new person, so 40 people total, you will earn the coveted white Mercedes, which is like the pinnacle, like, of success. It's touted as like social proof and financial freedom. And they were like, if you could do that before you go on maternity leave, imagine like the residual income you would be bringing into your family and what that would do. Like, what could you do with that? So I was relentless. I messaged people on my breaks at work. I mean, one of the first things you're told to do is make a list of 100 people that you know, and you're given verbiage to say like, hey, I did a thing. I started something new. I'm really excited about it. I've been using these products. Would you be open? The same tactics like you had asked me, like, how did that feel? I was taught them. And at this time, I didn't notice, oh, those were used on me until much later. But all of those things, I was told, like, consume all these trainings. So I would go to work with the voices of these upline, like, mentors in my head, in my brain. And I remember some of the women were very, like, fired up. And my work at the time was very dark. So hearing all of this positivity just felt like being wrapped in like a warm hug. And I was like, this is the best feeling ever. Like, I want to continue this feeling. I want my skin to be clear. I want to lose weight. I want to be beautiful and young and rich and successful and happy. And I don't want to say for the first time in my life, but like, it began to feel like it was in within reach, like, not understanding that I was like chasing an ideal that I didn't know I wanted, but society was telling me I wanted. You know, I mean, in the beginning, it felt really good. It felt fun to get a bunch of women over at my house. And like, I was the first person in my area to really bring Arbonne there. And so one of my first events, somebody said, hey, I want to do this with you. Like, can I do this with you? And I remember thinking, Can you? Like, wouldn't that be weird if we were both selling Arbonne? And calling the woman who had recruited me and saying, I have someone here who wants to do this with me, not even realizing that that was recruiting and that was the point of it. And she was like, oh my gosh, you're so amazing. You already have someone who wants to join you. Look at you, rock star. And I'm like, wow, like I must be really good at this. And we started to do events together. She was doing her own events. You know, I wouldn't say like, sales doubled or anything like that, but it did. It's like it clicked for me. Oh, I get this now. If I just get some people, then they're doing them. And it's like all my income is only going to grow, right? Even though I'm doing these events and maybe making like $50 a pop, but I'm doing like maybe $500 in sales, but like the commission, it's like 35% in Arbonne. You know, it's so convoluted, the compensation plans of all of these things. So I honestly, to this day, I couldn't even explain it to you. So, but then there's like override percentages. And then if you sell certain kits, you get more. And I had no idea what I should have been making, but I'm like, if all these people are working under me, that I should make more. So that's when things click that. And I think other people knew that was like, nah, it's not actually not about sales. It's about recruiting. But I still didn't think that it was nefarious. You know, I'm like, these people are willingly wanting to join.
Right. Interesting. Right. So there wasn't any suspicion that you were going to have at this point, especially if it felt really nice. Sounds like there was just this endorphin rush. That you were able to do something that felt great and exciting and lighter, which is gonna, not only is it gonna make you not notice certain things, but it's gonna make you not want to notice certain things, which is probably something that a lot of people think about in retrospect. But also the fact that you can't explain the math, which says something to me because right? Because you're this bright woman, right? Who should be able to master the system if it's masterable, if it makes sense. But it, you know, makes me think that things were kept from you and that things really ultimately didn't make sense, or maybe they were more random than they were made out to be.
Well, and Rachel, there were times throughout the 8 years that I would have a teammate be like, oh, you know, my check was lower than I was expecting. And they would reach out to me. And I would reach out to the woman who had this business financial acumen, this Wall Street executive. And she would tell me, oh, don't worry, Arbonne will make it right. Don't worry, we're going to do a training on that. Just hold on. We're going to do a whole training on the compensation plan. So that would be my answer. And then by the time the training came out, you know, you just kind of brushed the question to the side in most cases. People would be like, oh, it's not a big deal. I'm probably wrong. And they'd kind of talk themselves out of their doubts. That was often something that was like, oh, or let me find an answer. And then even if I would follow up and say, hey, did you ever find out what happened with, you know, this teammate's check? Or could you maybe explain the compensation plan a little further to me? It would be like, yeah, I remember we're doing that training. So just wait, just wait.
Wow. It's interesting. The just wait thing, and then it will be made clear, and probably not, happens almost across the board in almost every group. Like, when am I going to understand what's happening here? When am I going to get the answers? For some reason, my mind is going right to Scientology right now, where there are all these different levels. And it's not until you get to the third level that they introduce you to basically the philosophy or the theology of the group, that it's about intergalactic warriors and Xenu and blah, blah, blah. But why do you not get it till that third level? Because the first two levels are going to have you getting into the mindset of being open to all of this and also teaching you to not question along the way. And that if you question or doubt, you're going to get in your own way of receiving the benefits. So they're sort of teaching you to handicap yourself in having critical thinking, kind of putting it on the shelf. So by the time they talk about, you know, intergalactic warriors, you might go, okay, well, all right, it's a little odd, but you know, I can't doubt it. I have to, you know, go along with it, or else all this money and time I just spent will be for naught.
Yes, the sunk cost fallacy, the self-blame of, you know, maybe I'm just not open enough. I always thought I was open-minded, but I guess I'm not. That played with me for the 8 years for sure. And so like at this point, I mean, we're super early in like this whole convoluted journey that I went on, but so I have my baby. So this was ramping up to my maternity leave. And I'm like thinking, okay, now I can kind of sit back and just kind of have these clients be purchasing and make the extra money that I'd promised. I had no sense of like quitting my job or anything at this point. And I had recruited like a handful of people at this point within like my first 3 months, because I had some friends and I don't know, I was able to have people join me for whatever reason. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. And I promoted to what is considered like area manager, which is like the second of only four levels. So I was told like, wow, you're already halfway to the top and you've only been doing this for how long? And you've been doing it alongside a full-time career while pregnant. Imagine what you could create if you quit your job and did this full-time. And I'm like, gosh, I mean, having a baby is all these different emotions. You don't want to leave the baby. Like hormones are all over the map. My brain wasn't in the right place. I just never wanted to leave my baby. And I thought, God, that sounds amazing. And I still get a little emotional thinking about it, because it was from that point where it was also like, and you have these cute little kids that you can use to promote your business. You can connect with and help other moms. And that's right there where it's like, yes, this is my duty. And it's quite frankly a privilege to help these other women escape their 9-to-5, just like I'm going to do. Just watch me. And it became this total mindset shift of come hell or high water, I am going to the top of this company. And I never started that way. It was like, oh, I like these products. I should wash my face. Sign me up.
I should wash my face.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It was sense. That simple.
Uh-huh. But I think I can't help but just get this feeling as you're saying that they're basically saying, use your children as a recruitment tool. But at the time, it sounds like from what you're saying, it went right to this wanting to do good part of you. And you would have no way of knowing ultimately it wasn't good, because if all the things they were promising you were going to be coming true, you would potentially feel wrong not sharing it with other people and other maybe young moms in your situation.
Yeah. So almost all of the marketing that I did for my Arbonne business was me as a mom, you know, making protein shakes, doing makeup with my girls, like getting ready in the morning as a mom of two, eventually three. It also was like, you can't slow down. You look at all this momentum you've created. If you slow down and take a break, you're going to lose everything that you've worked for up to this point. Cause I had just like gotten that promotion. And so my maternity leave was spent messaging people constantly. I remember seeing a study or something like just a few months ago and like crying, because it was talking about like building empathy with your children and looking them in the eye. And during breastfeeding is a time to really do that and connect with your baby, and or feeding, not just breastfeeding, but feeding, and all the time that I had spent on my phone. not looking my baby in the eye and really, because it's true, because I thought these are my moments, because you get told this is a business you can fit in the nooks and crannies of your life. But while simultaneously, it's taking over every moment you have. But you think, and it's so messed up, but you think you are doing this in just these little pockets. I look at me living my life and doing this in these little pockets when it's actually the reverse. You're living your life in tiny little pockets. So during my maternity leave, I decide I'm not going to go back. I had spoken to my husband. I was like, I want to do this. I was continuing to grow. So I made the decision to leave my government job and do Arbonne full time. And I was touted and praised. I was even asked to do a training. Like, look at Jennifer. She's going all in for her business. She's already promoted to the area manager level. The next level is her Mercedes. I was asked to do to speak and train and it felt like I was making money, but I'm not making money doing any of this. And you're only making money when you recruit or when a sale is made. But there's so much unpaid work in multi-level marketing, going to events, traveling to people's houses, doing just lives, Facebook lives. Unless someone is purchasing from you, you're not getting paid. You're not on a clock. Preparing those trainings that I was then asked to give, and then, you know, none of that was paid. But I'm working constantly, and I get stuck at that level for the next 4 years, and so I went really quickly, right? And so then now I'm stuck midway up the pyramid, okay? And what's the first thing I'm told? It must be something wrong with you. When did your mindset change? When did you stop believing in Arbonne? When did you stop believing in yourself? When did you stop believing in these products? And so I'm like on this self-help spiral, like, just trying to consume everything that I can. And I was at a training and I was like told, well, maybe you need like outside coaching. And so this is where I went to a multi-level marketing, actually industry event. So you have, not only do you have your multi-level marketing company events, but there are coaches that do industry events. And I don't even like to call it an industry. What should I call it?
We'll try to think of a good word.
But there are actually coaches that train to every company, even though they may be affiliated with a company and are probably ultimately trying to recruit you. That's how they make more of their money, is becoming a coach themselves. I like that this is being talked about more, and which is why I reached out to as a potential guest, is because there is this like MLM to coaching pipeline.
Yeah. And in fact, there was someone who was on this show who was talking about learning to be a coach. And it was through an MLM that teaches people how to coach, which is like this very meta thing, right? Wow. But that she was saying that she had no training. And not that you need training to call yourself a coach, which is always good for people to know. There are some coaches that might be good, but others might not be. And there's no safeguard. There's no standard. There's no training that is uniform. Yes, you can be trained in certain programs, but it's not a necessity to call yourself a coach. So she was saying that if a certain kind of coaching or whatever she called herself wasn't yielding enough new customers, they would just say, well, what do you want to say that you're a coach in tomorrow? And she would come up with the idea that morning in the shower. And then that's the kind of coach she was that day. And so that's really valid. Okay. So I didn't mean to jump in, but it's so interesting because there's all these like things within things. So what happens? So you're sent to a coach, and also just this idea that it has to do with your mindset. that is the problem. I mean, that's also uniform. That's very culty, which, and it's so unfair because you were all in.
Yeah. So I go to this event in Vegas and I see Ray and Jessica Higdon speaking on stage at this event, and they are multi-level marketing coaches, and they have a group called Rank Makers. And the premise of Rank Makers at that time was that Ray or Jessica would go live every single day with just a simple action step to help you grow your multi-level marketing business. And at that time, I like craved simplicity because I thought, well, maybe that's what my problem is like, I'm trying to do too much. Like, I need to get back to basics. And that was also something that was told to me. Like, you need to get back to basics. You need to book your calendar. You need to like follow up with the people that you had been talking to. You know, what's wrong with your system? And so I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to do too much. I need to get simple. So because he had said that, I was like, this is what I need. I signed up for his online coaching group, Rank Makers. And this was, for one of the things that was really helpful for me in my healing was like to put together my timeline and just kind of like figure out when did this happen. And so this was like early 2019. We're talking like pre-pandemic and all of that. And so I'm in this group and I am just like, I'm coachable. That's like the epitome. That's like the pinnacle of what you want to be in MLM, or probably a lot of these culty groups, is like coachable, which basically just means you're obedient and you'll do what you're told. And so I'm like, I'm coachable. I'm going to do exactly what he says. And so I did the action step that he gave. And just for some context, so people know, like the action steps were like, reach out to 5 people today, or write down 3 things you're grateful for. Or go live on Facebook sharing your product. Okay. So they weren't things that I didn't already know or wasn't already doing, but it's like I felt like this was different. This was a change of scenery. Well, everything leading up to that was up to Arbonne's like global training conference. And the global training conference is like kind of like a large group awareness training where everybody comes. But the big thing that they do at these large group awareness trainings, I mean, other than like not really give you actual business advice, it's more just like pump you up. They also always release brand new products. And so you're expected to invest in those products, even though, remember when I got on that call with that woman and I invested in the largest package for my business? I was told at that time, you only have to invest in this once. These products sell themselves. People will go online and order their own stuff. So you just really have to make this $2,500 investment this one time. And that couldn't have been further from the truth, because they were always releasing new products and you were expected to use them, because how could you sell them if you weren't personally using them? I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but there's also a term in Arbonne called Arbonizing your home. And so you're expected to everything in your home that you would use, toothpaste, deodorant, body wash, shampoo, conditioner, baby care, sunscreen, skincare, you would switch out your brand to Arbonne, because you have to become a product of the product. And if people come to your house, they're going to use your lotion, your toothpaste, they're going to want to know where they got it, and they're just going to buy from you. It's that easy.
Wow. Okay. Just that phrase, you have to become a product of your product. My goodness. There's no separation from the self then.
That's how I felt every day. If I had like a zit on my face, or like I felt bloated that day, I'm like, I was so hard on myself, because like I have to look like this model in order to sell things, because who sells things but like, you know, our societal standard of what beauty is. And that, you know, that isn't totally Arbonne's fault. That's a societal thing that I struggled with, right? But it was absolutely like chewed up and spit out, as in. And then you're on social media all day, every day, prospecting, trying to recruit people, using it for your business. So then those you know, that isn't good for your mental health.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Just to have to embody it, to be it, to be walking, breathing, everything, the stress of that. I don't know what that started to do to you.
Yeah. And there would be like leaders that would look like they had Botox or some sort of cosmetic surgery. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of that, but then act like it was Arbonne. You know, and I could tell that they were lying. That actually started to like cause some cognitive dissonance for me. So I'm like, I know that she also gets Botox, which is fine. But sorry, I went off on a little tangent there. But so I'm doing these action steps. And so this is all leading up to Arbonne Global Training Conference. And Arbonne also had like this standard where they taught you, you wanted 4 sets of the new products. And whenever I say this, I always have to repeat it because people are like, 4? And I'm like, 4. They're like, 4? Uh-huh. And I'm like, yes, 4. 4. 1 for you, 1 for your events and to use at presentations, 1 to give to friends, families, UPS workers, teachers, daycare providers, coworkers, to like as gifts, okay? And then 1 set as a backup because things are going to sell out. And when they sell out, because Arbonne is so popular, you're going to want to have some for just your clients. You're going to want to have the coveted, like sold out product to be able to provide to them. So we were encouraged to not just buy 1, but buy 4 kits. And I taught this to my team. And here's where like the victim perpetrator thing comes. So imagine my team of all the people that I've recruited now, our volume, because we're all buying these new sets, which were around like $600 a pop, our volume quadrupled, like our sales volume. But it's really just us purchasing product. We're not selling it. We're all convinced we're selling it. But for the most part, I bet you 70, 80% of that was just consultants buying for their own, like homes, friends, whatever. So because our volume tripled, I now qualified and earned the coveted Arbonne White Mercedes. I was now in qualification for regional vice president. And I thought, oh my God, it's this coaching from Ray. I immediately put all of it on this coach. It's because I hired this coach. I changed my mindset. Finally, I finally felt worthy of success. So, you know, my team, we have what's called a Ben's Bash in Arbonne. You pay for it all out of pocket, but you're expected to like show it on social media. Look at me. I earned my Mercedes. And I say earned because what you actually do is you go to the dealership, you sign a 3-year lease based on your credit. You, not Arbonne, are locked into that lease under your name. And if you continue to hit a certain sales quota, Arbonne will give you a percentage toward your payment, but it's not the full payment. So if I hit one sort of quota, I might get $200. If I hit a certain quota, I might get $400 toward that payment. But my payment was $800 a month, and never did Arbonne pay for any part of that. You know, or I mean, for that whole entire payment, for that, you know, I was you're told from day one that you sign up that this is social proof. Once you're driving that Mercedes, people are going to be knocking down your door to join your business, right? And so I thought, you know, even if I do have to pay for this, so many people are going to join me. It's going to make up for itself. Because people are like, well, do you have to sign up for the Mercedes? No, but you are strongly encouraged because this is now a marketing tool. This is like your business on wheels. This is social proof. My husband was very much against it, did not want me to do it at all, said, this isn't free at all. And really me getting the Mercedes, like he was supportive, but financially, he knew that it was not a good decision. And plus, I think we've done a lot of healing in our marriage, thankfully, since then. But like, at this point, I'm like married to Arbonne. All of my free time is spent like trying to, there's always something to do for your business. There's always something you're not doing is the reason that you're not where you want to be. So I have this Mercedes. I give all the credit to Rankmakers, and I put this post in the Rankmakers coaching group that just says, like, I earned my Mercedes thanks to Ray's coaching. I think that day I was reached out to by someone on their sales team that said, you know, hey, we saw your story and all of your success in your Arbonne business. We would love to have you have one-on-one coaching. And at this point, I think it's with Ray. We have a program called the 100K Inner Circle. It's going to help you get to six figures in your business. And if you're around like the multi-level marketing space, you'll see that six figures is like the touted, now it's seven figures and eight figures, but it's like this number that just gets thrown out there. So that was a $5,000 investment. So at this point, not only did I purchase like four new product kits from the global training conference, but I signed a 3-year lease for a Mercedes that I could not afford. And now I'm investing $5,000 in another coach and in a new coach program. So I'm in there and I just really learned more manipulative scripts. One of the big things that we're taught is don't say Arbonne anymore on your social media. If you say Arbonne, people are going to know it's MLM. You don't want them to know it's MLM. So just say like my health and wellness business, or you know, I was struggling with bad skin and I found something that I started using and within 3 days, my skin cleared up and I'm even sleeping better. It's like, you could say anything as long as you don't say the company name. So in this coaching, I just learned, I mean, looking back, just more manipulative tactics, more deceit, more ways to make people kind of not really know what they were saying yes to. So I was getting more yeses because people didn't know what they were saying yes to. Before they knew they were saying yes to Arbonne, now they think they're saying yes to better health. They're saying yes to more time with their kids.
Wow. So I wonder about the other techniques that you learned besides just kind of subterfuge, just sort of hiding the name of the company. What else did you learn to do, or did they teach you to do?
So we learned different scripts, just kind of, they were more like just little verbiage tweaks. So you would never ask somebody, are you interested in learning more about what I do? You would always say, are you open? That was one that you never said interested, because nobody's ever going to be interested. You want people do care about whether they're open or not. Everyone wants to be open-minded. They want to be accepting. The other little tactic that we would learn, oh, you're making me like go, I'm glad these things aren't in my brain as much anymore. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But you would never want to ask a yes or no question. You would always want to ask open-ended questions and get them to tell you more about themselves. So then you could then use that to say, well, I'm also a mom. You know, I've also struggled with my weight. I've also, you know, wondered how I'm going to make rent this month. And then you would use that as a way to connect with them. Another tactic was, and Ray would call this being postured, and he had a definition for being postured, which is the belief in what you have regardless of external acceptance or approval, which I can still rattle off. But that was something that was drilled into us, that if you are postured in sales, you have belief in what you have regardless of external acceptance or approval. And so anytime, you know, somebody would say something that made you question what you were doing, like, is this icky? Am I being like an icky salesperson? You would immediately go, oh, nope, I got to be postured. And how that translated as you're talking to people online is if they would say no, I'd say, okay, no worries. I've got tons of other people to follow up with. Almost like you don't matter to me. That was being postured. We were told to say, like, if not, no worries. So if I would reach out to somebody, I might say something like, hey, I noticed you're a busy mom just like me. And a few years ago, I was struggling. Somebody reached out to me and shared an awesome opportunity. I've been able to make some extra income online. Just curious if you'd be open to checking out what it is that I do. If so, great. I have a short video that I can pass along. If not, no big deal. So you kind of, we would say, ask if they're open and then give them an out. So I'm sharing this, and the way that, see, I like kind of slip back into that mode and it just rattles off. So, and it's crazy how it that happens sometimes. But if anyone has, any listeners have ever received a message like that, they probably have. So we were told to give people an out. So then they wouldn't feel so pressured. But then once you started the conversation, you would kind of increase the pressure, like the frog in the boiling pot. Like you might say something like, if you're like, if not, no worries, and say they watched the video, you might say something like, well, I have tons of other people to follow up with, or we have this sale that is, you know, it ends the end of this month. And if you don't say, if you don't make a decision now, you may never make a decision.
Right.
Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's probably all the same.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's like this, you know, this idea of immediacy and scarcity, and you need to make a decision now. It's this opportunity is not going to come around again. And so, and it only exists here. And, you know, if you want to have success, this is the way to do it. If you want to take advantage of an opportunity, if you're open to it, so to speak, there are a lot of techniques of influence at play here. A lot of ones that, you know, are business model that are used in cultic groups. The home shopping network idea of there are just 20 bracelets left and they will be sold out by midnight. And it's only at this price for this long. And this sale is never going to come around again, except because this is a recorded show. You'll see it every night for the next year. But you don't know that. So, yeah, there's just a lot. It's so interesting. My goodness. And so I hope it's not too upsetting for you to get back into this mindset. And I'm really happy that you can't fully remember some of it, which is really good. Like it's not totally on your mind. But yeah, it sounds like some things were done with so much repetition that you can just still rattle them off, which is how it is for a lot of people who remember the mantra they were taught or the sales pitch they were taught. It comes right back.
Yeah. Where I started to question, so I was now I'm proselytizing for Arbonne all the time, Ray and Rankmakers all the time. And because of like my, you know, success story, and because of all like the way that I'm kind of edifying him, I guess you could say, or more like deifying him, is because of that, I'm asked actually to become a coach. Then somebody reaches out to me and says, you know, you are like, you're doing everything that we want you to do. And we would love to have you as one of our coaches. And so now I'm a coach, and Ray is selling coaching packages for anywhere from courses for like $500 to like $10,000 and up, $20,000. And I'm getting paid $22 an hour to be one of his coaches. And he, you know, so he's paying his coaches that, and he's making the rest. So, that's another thing I get asked, well, how much did you get paid being one of his coaches? Because a lot of people in Rankmakers thought that all these coaches were making all this money, and we weren't. So I become one of his coaches. And at this time is where I really kind of started to question Arbonne a little bit. We were at the end of 2019, we were like really pushing because, you know, like the new year, new me kind of like diet trends, we were really pushing the 30 days. I almost said our 30 days to healthy living.
Uh-huh.
Their 30 days to healthy living. I gotta like take a breath and get out of the
right. Yeah. Yeah. You'll do some like woo, just shaking it off after
shake it off.
Exactly.
Their 30 days to healthy living. And I was really starting to question like the food shaming and the body shaming, because it is a very restrictive program where you can't, there's no gluten, dairy, soy, like no sweetener, you know, like the whole premise is like you cut out all these food groups and you're basically just only eating Arbonne's packaged foods. And I also, like me as a person, I had to pack my own lunch to go anywhere because I was worried about toxins and the food I was eating. And I had very disordered relationship with food. And I was just so fearful of everything having toxins. And I started to notice that in myself. And I'm like, I gotta take a step back from this. I don't want to teach this to my daughters. So I began to question the diet program within Arbonne. And that was kind of like the first crack in Arbonne, but I'm like, I'm a VP now. So like, I have to still show up and like put on a happy face and pretend that it's all like sunshine and roses. And then the pandemic hits like March, 2020. And there were several companies, I think somewhere like 19 companies or something, that were cited by the FTC for making false claims around COVID-19 and like the cure for COVID. And many companies were hit with massive lawsuits and investigations by the FTC. Arbonne was one of them. And many of the leaders did not take any responsibility or accountability. They were like, we are being unfairly targeted. Like, there's a demon among us. I'm not kidding. Like
a demon.
Yeah. The devil. Hello. The devil is after us. And there was always this idea of God and religion and Christianity within, interwoven into Arbonne. But again, I want to be open-minded and accepting. And so I'm like, that's fine. Like, people can have their religious beliefs, and it's not weird that I'm like, it's not weird. And now, of course, it's extremely
weird. Right.
But
right. It's not weird in parentheses. Yeah, it is. But I'm going to decide it's not.
So the way, I think it was the way that many of the like corporate Arbonne and then the top leaders who I was supposed to be like following and looking up to, the way they didn't take any accountability, because we were told, like us at the, I'm like at a higher level, I guess now, but we were kind of told that it's all the people at the lower levels that are making all the mistakes. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Right. Wow.
And so then instead of like really making any changes, we were just, again, taught more deception. So some examples of that, like they came out with this new like compliance policy. So like on social media, you couldn't say that you had an income or a financial opportunity. You could only say opportunity. You could no longer say financial freedom, but you could say freedom.
Wow. Okay.
You couldn't say recruiting. You had to say enroll. I'm going to enroll new people. So again, just more deception on more deception. And then at that time, because Ray is an opportunist, like a lot of cultish leaders, he launched what was called the Quarantine Business Blueprint, which was a course and a coaching program to help people who had lost their jobs and their income during COVID. And so we were, as coaches, now I'm working for him, right? So we're told to promote this. And I started to feel really ick about it. Like, I was like, oh my God, these people are like, we're taking advantage of their vulnerability. I began to kind of see that. And I began to question a little bit. And other people within the group felt the same. And they started to post within the group, like, this doesn't feel right. I don't want to share this with my team because they're really going through some hard times. And Ray did multiple live videos and trainings where he basically told people, like, it's your mindset and don't question me. And there is other creators, like anti-MLM creators, have actually created content with these videos where he's screaming into the camera and being very intimidating, like basically saying, like, you don't want to show up for your family. That's not my problem. It's your problem. Like, if you don't want to sell this or you don't want to share this with your teams, you'll never be rich. Like, it's you. The good part about that was, because of that, there was kind of a mass exodus from the group during that time. There were about 16,000 people in the group at that time, and it went down to like 13,000. But I'm working for him, so I'm still doing that. And he was telling us as coaches, he had this saying that was like, if you keep people around your campfire, sooner or later, they're going to catch a spark. So he would tell us, like, you want to stay around my campfire because my charisma, my health, whatever is going to rub off on you. So pay no attention to these people who are leaving, who are questioning. Trust me, you want to stay around my campfire because you're going to catch a spark if you haven't already.
Right. Wow. I understand the expression of like lighting a fire under people, catching a spark, but it's such an ironic image because really people are getting burned. And so that is so much of what's happening. Like when you catch the spark, then there is really a chance you're going to get burned. And to think about somebody who can then cultivate this idea of this whole quarantine idea, and that you, as all in as you are and were, that it felt icky to you, had like an ooh factor, as my kids would say, that there is, it doesn't register for him in that way, or for the people who are coming up with these schemes to take advantage and to take advantage when people are at a low point and feeling maybe hopeless or worried, and or dealing with illness or death in their family or whatever else. It feels unconscionable. But you saw it a lot. There were a lot of these kind of snake oil salesmen and women during that time, but also people jumping in and taking advantage of the financial insecurity and worry that people were having. So you just wonder what's different about these folks that it doesn't bother them at all.
Yeah. And when I expressed any sort of doubts or concern, again, like I would ask Ray for help, like my clients are struggling, what can I do? It was always like either the client's mindset or my mindset as a coach. Maybe I wasn't confident enough in my ability to coach them. Or if it wasn't that, it was, well, you need to sell them this course that he was offering. So it was hard. And then like looking back and trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, I then realized too, like it was at this point where there were people questioning, including his coaches and people that worked for him, that he created this speaking team. And of course, he asked me to be on it. He said, I'm going to create a group of $1 million speakers. I get asked to do so many speaking engagements and training for the MLM industry that I can't keep up, and I need a team that's going to represent me. And I want, you know, you to be on it. I was selected to be on the speaking team. So I was like, oh, wow. And of course, they called it like the $1 million speaking team. So remember, that first group was the 100K inner circle coaching. Now it's the $1 million speaking team. Like it's always got to up level itself to keep you chasing that. So now I'm not only a coach, I'm on his speaking team. We are asked to do training and his daily videos for him now. But it's still like anytime I have questions, I'm thinking like it's me. So I thought, well, you know what? I'm questioning Arbonne and MLM. Maybe I'll just become a coach, like the best coach I can be. Okay. So who is the best coach, business coach out there, but Tony Robbins? And so I decide to invest in Tony Robbins coaching. And I go through Tony Robbins, like entire Date with Destiny, like life mastery, business mastery, every single thing that he offered during the pandemic. And it's all virtual, so I can do it all from home. And I come back to like raise people. And I say, like, I'm very proud of this. I went through this like intense coaching program that was like 6 months. And I'm like, I'm going to be the best coach. And I actually ask for a raise. And they give me a $2 raise. But they say, in no way, shape, or form can you promote any of Tony Robbins' programs because Tony is one of Ray's biggest competitors. So they say, whatever you did doesn't count for anything here. So I like feel bad, you know, like I did something to upset the leader.
Yeah, right, right. Or you betrayed him in some yes. way, right? Yeah.
Whereas I truly thought like I'm doing this so I can be the best coach and speaker that I can be because, and of course there were things during Tony Robbins that I now look back on and realize were very insidious. But that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. That'll be our part two. Just let me know if you want to set that up.
The things during the Tony Robbins program was I did do a profit and loss statement and I did it for my Arbonne business. And I realized I'm not making any money. Oh my gosh, this whole time I'm not making any money. So I decide at that point, this is like, I don't know, March, 2021, I'm going to stop purchasing products from Arbonne. I'm going to stop actively recruiting. I had already stopped kind of promoting the diet program, but now I'm really going to just take a step back. And I kind of was toying with the idea of it being a pyramid scheme, but I never said it out loud. But I'm like, because when I stopped actively purchasing products, right, and recruiting, all of a sudden my income, where any income, I wasn't making much money, but anything that I, what I'm saying is anything that I was making was now, was like where it didn't exist. And I also start to become like really depressed and anxious. I start grinding my teeth really bad to the point where I actually had to have dental surgery.
Oh my, wow.
And so I have the dental surgery and I took the time off. So to take time off as a coach for Ray, we were expected to, you couldn't just say, oh, I can't work this day. You actually had to find another day to meet with those clients. So if I had clients scheduled on like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I needed to take Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, I would have to then see them Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like you had to see them.
No matter what.
You really couldn't take time off. And it was, but it was like, you know, you're doing this alongside your life again. Like this is, you can create your own schedule. So I like rearranged my schedule to have this dental surgery. And now I'm on painkillers. I have antibiotics. Like I'm in pain. I can barely speak or talk. And I get a call from someone on Ray's sales team that says, we have a difficult client that paid for like the biggest package. And she is wanting to quit. And if you can save her, then we'll throw in a bonus for you. And I'm like, I took this day off. I can barely speak. And they're like, you don't even have to talk. Just listen. She just needs someone to listen to her. You're our best coach. And I think with my social work background and stuff, like I probably could, you know, listen and knew some things. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm on the phone with this client for like 2 hours, just like trying to save them and also feeling like if I don't save them, I'm in really big trouble. So I get off the phone and I am so emotional and upset and I'm in pain and I'm on painkiller. Like I have, you know, I'm on antibiotics and medicine and I get so angry that I knew that there was a woman who had left Rankmakers and had started creating content about Ray. And she was a former client of mine. And her name is Julie Anderson. She makes anti-MLM content. And I had never allowed myself to look at what she was creating because we were told not to. And I was so mad that I'm like, I got to go see what Julie is saying because I'm starting to feel really bad about what I'm doing. And I did. And that day, I mean, I just sat there and I just watched every single video that she had talking about mind control and Steve Hassan. And I purchased Ponzinomics by Robert Fitzpatrick. I bought Combating Cult Mind Control and Freedom of Mind. I found your podcast. She had created content about all of these things. And I started to, like, all of a sudden, I was just devouring it and behind the scenes. And I also, that day, as I'm listening to all this, realized that I was both a victim and a perpetrator. And realized how not only were these things used on me, but how I had used them on her, because she was one of my coaching clients. She never said me, but she said Ray, because she understood that it was bigger than that.
Right.
So I reach out to her and I say, like, thank you. And I'm sorry. And I'm questioning and I'm working on my exit strategy. Like, I'm so sorry you've had to, like, do all of this alone, but, like, people are listening. And it just, like, seeing her things reminded me, like, how important all of our voices are. And so I think she gave me the courage to then start to speak out. So we had monthly meetings with Ray as coaches where he would, like, coach his coaches. And we would come to him with questions. And at this time, because of my questioning, I did start recording meetings with him because anytime I would say, oh, you said this, of course I was gaslit and said, I never said that. So I did have the wherewithal to start recording meetings, and we were encouraged actually to record them, to listen to them, probably for, like, you know, further indoctrination and whatever it was. During a meeting this is May, 2022, another coach had brought up, she had said, you know, I have clients who are still struggling with mental health and you're just telling them to buy more coaching and do the work, or it seems like you're doing that and just do the work. And it seems like it's more harmful than helpful. And, like, Ray went off on this whole tangent about, like, his new book. And he said that we were defying that we need to learn to defy our emotions. And we need to teach our clients to defy their emotions. And so much of what he was saying, I recognized from the cult literature that I was consuming, like gaslighting and just, like, information control. And you must have been able to read it on my face, because he then called me out and said, Rahala, and he always mispronounced my last name, and I think he did it on purpose, to be quite honest. He never took the time to learn how to pronounce it. So he'd say, Rahala, what's up with you? Like, he calls me out in the middle of the meeting, and I expressed that, you know, I feel like the advice that you're giving is actually very harmful. And I'm kind of questioning, like, whether what we're doing, just telling people to buy more coaching and, like, coaching coaches to become coaches, is actually effective. And Ray told everybody that I was a prime example of someone who had unresolved resentment. And he said, you know, if you've hated it here for so long, why have you stayed? Because, like, we're going to change the world. And if you don't want to change the world with us, why haven't you said anything? And everyone else doubled down, as people in cults do. And they came to his aid And he continued to like belittle me in front of the group. And within 24 hours, I was excommunicated from the group. All my accounts were shut down, my email address, courses that I had paid for, because as coaches, we also had to pay for courses.
Right, the other of course. Thing. Right.
I was removed from all like messenger threads, and I was people, content was made about me, and saying that like I was demonic energy, and so was Julie Anderson, and vibrating at a lower frequency, like all of those things.
All the things, yep.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I realized I was in a cult, and I began making anti-MLM and anti-cult content. And there were several whistleblowers that then reached out to me to like express like, oh my gosh, I felt the same way. And we all started creating content. And because I think a large part due to so many people who had again left and started speaking out, he had kind of like a whole brand shift where now he is, his group is, I don't know if Rankmaker still exists. It might specifically for MLMs, but now he does like a walk in faith with Bray, where he's declared himself a prophet and he got a message from God, and that he's selling coaching for to interpret the Bible for businessmen. And so he's had a whole brand change. And yeah.
Wow. Incredible. So I know we need to finish up, and I maybe we need to set up another time, because I want to hear more about your transition out of it. And because that's a really important piece, because yes, you know, you're defamed and people will set up sites against you, which just shows the immaturity of it all. But also this whole idea that after all of this, and after, you know, your 3-year lease of a car and $800 a month, all of that, all the things that you did that you were pushed to do, suddenly you are this evil person who has something really wrong with her, and that you could just be discarded in this way and defamed in this way. It just shows how much they really don't care about the individual, but they care about what value you can bring to them and keep the machine well oiled. But it's a horrible thing to not just be pushed out, but kind of spat out. But I would love, if it's okay with you, to set up a time where we can talk about kind of what happened next and what life was like and how you were able to get past it. But I am so happy for you that you were able to do the reading and find out. And it's very hard to suddenly look at what you've been involved in and realize what it really is. I am so glad that you are where you are now, and that you also have connected with the person who you feel that you got involved in, you know, and I'm glad that she noticed and is careful to make a distinction that it's not because of you that you are a cog in the wheel of this whole machine. But thank you. Thank you so much for all that you shared. And I do hope we can talk again. It was really important, an important discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
One more thing before you go. Oh my goodness. It's amazing speaking to Jennifer Raiola. I think it is so important that she is talking about her experiences from this perspective of really having believed and really having wanted something to be what it promised it was going to be, and have a payout for all of her work and all of her devotion and all of her sacrifice. And I think also, once you get involved in something and you get other people involved in it, and you try to talk other people into why it's a good idea, it becomes even harder to step back, to look, to see. It becomes difficult on the ego, but just on the conscience, to be able to really look at this for what it is and see what you got other people involved in really, through no fault of your own, really with good intentions, believing that you were spreading something into other people's lives that could be useful, helpful, instrumental, one of a kind. And it is quite incredible to hear her speak, because when I talked to her today, and you're going to get to hear the second part of our conversation, which is really wonderful because there's so much more to it. But today, she talked a lot about how they learned really to gaslight themselves. They would learn to talk themselves out of their doubts. This is something that I hear, I think, about 100% of the time, which is, you know, pretty high, that people talk themselves out of their doubts and they learn to do that, that doubting is somehow against this principle of being positive. And then it goes into the realm of what we call toxic positivity, that you can't have doubts. You can't really even worry about how things are not turning out the way you had thought, because even your worry about it is going to get in your way somehow. I think doubts and I think worry, of course, can be overplayed. I think that people can have too many of them at times where it keeps them from having even the smallest success and the smallest joy. But when you're talking about something like this, where people are really not trying to be negative and they're not trying to be doubtful, I think that what they're trying to do is point out what is, point out the truth, point out what they're seeing, point out what is happening and what isn't happening. And when we talk about what is happening and what isn't happening, I go to this phrase that Jennifer used, which was, "I felt like I was making money." That's a fascinating phrase. I felt like I was making money. So either you are or you're not. But just to be feeling like you are is not enough of a gauge to know if you are or if you're not. But it just shows how much this group is good at convincing people of things, of suspending their disbelief in maybe the fact that it's not paying out as it was supposed to. There is an incredible thing when you are told that you need to talk yourself out of your doubts. You're really told to wait. Just keep waiting. Just keep waiting to see. And if you don't see, don't really notice that you're not seeing. Keep staying in this sense that you feel like it is succeeding. So you get farther and farther away from something tangible and real and just into your own head about it, which is never a good idea when you're doing something like getting involved in a business in order to help support yourself or support your family. You need to know if it's working or not. And the other part that I hear almost 100% of the time is that if it doesn't quite make sense, if it doesn't come together, just wait and it will make sense and it will be explained. It will all come together logically. So that's not enough information too. It will make sense and it will be explained. If I were to get involved in something, even if I were to sign up for classes to learn something, and I'm still not learning that thing, and I say to the teacher kind of at the end of the semester, "I don't know if I've learned anything yet." And they say, "Well, just wait. It will happen in the future." I wonder why then that would be acceptable ever. If it is for a business, if it is for something also that you've put every penny into, they owe you on so many levels. They owe you, but really, most importantly, by being honest, by telling you what's true, telling you what's possible here. And if you feel like you're not making success, the same thing happens here that happens in a lot of large group awareness trainings and cultic groups, where they will say, the reason that you're not having success is that you stop believing in it. And the reason that you're not having success is that you changed your mindset. And if you didn't change your mindset, then you would be making as much money as you thought you were going to be making, or that you hoped, or that we promised you'd be making. So you go further and further and further down the rabbit hole without knowing what's happening. It is so disorienting, but at its core, as I've said, it is so disrespectful. If someone is coming to you for anything, it would be like me with providing counseling. If someone says to me, I've been meeting with you for a few months now and I don't feel like I'm really getting any help, I wouldn't say, well, just keep hanging in there and at some point, I'll help you. I would say, oh, I'm really glad you let me know. And I'm sorry that you feel that way. Let's figure out a different way of approaching what is on your mind. Or maybe I need to refer you out to someone else. That's being, I think, responsive. That's also not keeping someone on hold, perpetually on hold, so that you can reap the benefit of their waiting, that you can reap the benefit of them pouring more time, more free labor, more money into a business while you keep them waiting. Thank you so much to Jennifer for our conversation today. And I look forward to having you hear the next part of our conversation next week. Take good care. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much for listening. Please support Indoctrination on Patreon at patreon.com/indoctrination. Be sure to give us a follow on our social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram using @indoctrinationpodcast. And for Twitter, find us @_indoctrination. We love hearing from you too. So send us an email at indoctrinationshow@gmail.com. And for more updates on the show, visit our website at www.podpage.com/indoctrination.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.